Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Each week, we tackle a different issue that's uniquely Portland. So tune in every Saturday to hear a new episode complete with interviews and editorial that helps explain our city. From Portland's leading paper comes a brand new way to engage with the news, sports, arts, and culture. Stick around. Welcome to episode 16 of the Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Today is April 17th, and you know what that means. We're only a few days away from 420, which is National Weed Day, and that's what we're talking about today. Pot has been legal in Oregon for recreational use for almost 6 years now, and this week's cover story is all about marijuana, and we'll get into that. We'll talk to the author of the cover story, talk about how marijuana is looking in Portland, but we're also joined by Congressman Earl Blumenauer, Portland's representative, one of the most vocal supporters of the legalization of recreational marijuana in the country. So it's good to have him with us. All that and more coming up later on in the podcast. But first, everything you got to know that's happened in the week, all the headlines just right here. 90-second news flash. Get ready to run it back with the smog and smoke this summer because unusually dry temperatures have the National Weather Service warning of more fires around Portland again this year. Speaking of fires, protesters clashed with police as demonstrations broke out in the city in response to the killing of Dante Wright. Nike paid less in taxes than you did, unless that is you are convicted of tax evasion. Nike paid $0 in taxes last year, and our guest today, Congressman Earl Blumenauer, sat down with the Willamette Week staff and discussed the next bridge over the Columbia River, claiming it won't get built unless there is a light rail portion. That's the only way the government will fund us. Restaurants and bars are starting to open up. In fact, Kochka made news by opening up their indoor dining. And honestly, guys, more of that to come. Don't worry about that. That's next week's problem. We got a whole cover story coming for you for that. This has been the 90-second news flash. Folks, before we play our exclusive interview with Earl Blumenauer, let's talk to Matthew Singer, the author of this week's cover story, and just get a little refresher on what this week's cover story was all about, because Willamette Week looked at weed in a very unique way this year, coming off the heels of the pandemic, looking to see how pandemic has affected stoners and the weed industry. So let's just get a little recap on what the cover story was about, and then we'll get into the interview with Blumenauer. So first off, here's Singer. Matthew Singer, let's talk about this week's cover story. What can readers expect to learn from this week's cover story in the Willamette Week?
Well, you know, we do two cannabis-themed covers a year on the culture side. One is sometimes in it's usually in October, called the Harvest issue. And then, of course, we do one around 420. This is our 420 issue. And in sort of looking for what direction to take it this year, you know, I think the biggest news of the last year is that the fact that in the cannabis world is the fact that the cannabis industry is one of the industries that really has kind of proven to be pandemic proof. It is starting in March of last year when everything first started shutting down. Cannabis sales in Oregon exploded, and they kept breaking single month sales records right up until the end of the year. And when we look at the 2020 sales in Oregon, it passed $1 billion in total sales for the first time, and it's just kept going up. The OLCC's most recent data shows that March was another record-breaking month for cannabis sales. And so, you know, my thought process is, well, who's buying all that weed? Is it just people hoarding, you know, hardcore stoners hoarding weed? Like, you know, people are hoarding toilet paper and flour and that kind of stuff. Or is there a bunch of new cannabis consumers out there who are, you know, they're stressed out, they're at home, they need something to pass the time, and they're like, hey, there's a dispensary down the street, it's still open, they never close, it's been deemed essential by the state. Maybe I'm going to try smoking some weed either for the first time or for the first time since high school or college or whatever. So the kind of theme of this issue is it's aimed at those prospective new smokers who have kind of picked up a new habit and have kind of folded it into their lifestyle and are like, you know, hey, I want to kind of keep doing this even though we're coming out of the pandemic. What do I need to know? Because, you know, getting high is never just getting high. It's a culture. There's a lot of science at play. So, you know, for those people who kind of want to do it a little bit more than just every once in a while, we kind of want to give them a starting point.
If you're talking weed in Portland, you need to get the opinion of Earl Blumenauer because he is one of the most vocal supporters anywhere in the nation of the decriminalization and legalization of recreational marijuana. We got him on the podcast. We talked to him about weed, 420, bunch of other issues. Take a listen. You've been one of the most vocal supporters of the legalization, decriminalization of marijuana. Let's start with this. Why? What's your reasoning behind that?
It never made sense to me to criminalize adult behavior that, frankly, is no more harmful, in fact, is less harmful than things that are legal. Cigarettes kill far more people. There are some people that have problems with alcohol, and it ends up killing people on our roadways. And to have criminalized this when it's not more damaging, and when it led to grotesquely inappropriate discrimination. I mean, this was introduced a half century ago by Richard Nixon's war on drugs, and he deliberately targeted people of color, young African-American men, black men, and young people. To me, it never made any sense. I didn't think it was enforceable. Or it should be enforced. And so I've been pleased to work on the decriminalization and over the years trying to advance full repeal of this harmful prohibition. And the last 10, 12 years, it has gained momentum, widespread support. When we started, it was maybe one in three people agreed with it, at least until you had a chance to work with them. Now we are approaching 70% of the population that thinks it's a good idea. It's taken a long time to sink in, but I think it was worth the effort.
Yeah, you know, there's two things that are really important there that you said. And I think obviously, you know, I can totally agree with all the findings that the criminalization has had a negative impact. But I also wanna ask about like the theory that other things are legal, which means that marijuana should be legalized. Do you have issue with that, where it's like, just because alcohol is legal, does that mean that something that is slightly less detrimental, like marijuana, it should be legal?
I think you have to be very careful about efforts at prohibition. The prohibition of alcohol didn't end well, and the prohibition of cannabis has been an abject failure. It hasn't stopped access. Indeed, Jeff Sessions, when he was attorney general, was on this jihad to ramp up the war on drugs. And yet there's no junior high student in his home state of Alabama who had a harder time getting a joint than getting a six-pack of beer.
Yeah, I actually want to talk about that specific issue too, because I am not 21 and I've never used marijuana, but I have been in middle school and high school when it was, before it was legal, and then when it was legal. Right. And it has been more difficult for, when I've seen, you know, peers try to purchase marijuana, it is more difficult, whether it's more expensive or harder to get your hands on when it's illegal. Even for people of underage, that's my personal experience. People have been able to progressively get it a lot easier, even though they are not 21 and of age. I think that that's something that is corroborated by a lot of people, and I think that that's something to be expected. Do you see that as a lesser of two evils because you're solving a bigger issue? How do you look at that issue of increased access to underage?
Right now, access is ubiquitous. There's no junior high student that cannot get a hold of a marijuana product
that
he or she wants. But when we move to regulate cannabis, what we're doing is we are in fact making it harder. Part of the problem is that there's this extraordinary supply that's available. When we start legalizing, licensing, taxing, our experience is that poses some problems for the black market. There is no corner drug dealer, somebody who's peddling to kids in a park or on a schoolyard that has a license to lose. They don't check for ID. As we move towards treating it like we treat alcohol, regulate, tax, there are consequences, greater consequences for people who break the law. I think that this is clear in terms of trying to choke off the vast amount that's available in the black market. We're seeing the gray market being reduced. And once we have a national legalization system, I think that'll be even more the case. There aren't many moonshiners anymore in the aftermath of repeal of prohibition. And I think that's going to be the case when we have a more reasonable, thoughtful, uniform system dealing with cannabis. This is serious business. And the way that it happens now is that the heavy hand of the law, we arrest more people for cannabis than all the other elements of violent crime combined. There are over 500,000 arrests for something that most Americans now think should be legal. And as you know, those arrests are disproportionately young Black Americans, Brown Americans, even though their use is no different than white young people. This is a devastating disparity that ends up destroying the lives of young people, and there's no reason for us to do it anymore.
Yeah. Willamaweek has talked about marijuana on Cover Stories in some extent many times, and recently we covered weed robberies, and my naive brain was like, oh, once you legalize marijuana, there's probably no repercussions other than maybe, you know, some younger people being able to get fake IDs and get weed. But there are these repercussions around the banking because it's not federally regulated, or it's not federally legal. So talk to me about how you go into those discussions, did you know that was going to be a problem before it occurred, or is that something that you've learned about with all of us?
Absolutely. It made no sense among the many irrational aspects of federal cannabis policy now and the failed prohibition was the restrictions on state legal cannabis businesses having access to banking services. It made no sense. And I've been making this point repeatedly that when you are not going to allow them access to banking services, it's an invitation for money laundering, tax evasion, and yes, theft and robbery. That's been the case when you force an industry to pay their state taxes with shopping bags full of $20 bills. It's an attractive target for really bad people. We've seen that in our community. In Willamette Weeks, talked about over 100 robberies, including a recent death. It is a pattern that we're seeing around the country. And we've been beating this drum repeatedly. And that is why we were able to get the support to enact our Safe Banking Act. It passed in the last Congress with 321 votes, every Democrat except one, and about 40% of the Republicans. And this includes people who are skeptical about cannabis or even opposed to legalization, but they understand that the prohibition on banking is nuts. I'm quite confident that this is going to be changed in this Congress. When we passed with overwhelming bipartisan support, the Safe Banking Act and sent it to the Senate, Mitch McConnell put it in his little hospice where it could die. Well, that's not the case this time. The Senate is, because of those two key election victories in Georgia, the Senate, although it's evenly split, Vice President Harris breaks the tie, Democrats control, and we have Chuck Schumer, our own Oregon Ron Wyden, and Cory Booker, who are leading the charge in the Senate. And I'm confident we'll get the banking bill passed, and I think we've got a superb chance at finally getting full legalization.
Yeah, since this is the weed issue, like we've said many times, I'd be remiss to ask what kind of marijuana do you use?
I don't.
You don't? Okay.
Never have, never will. I think if I did, it would undercut my credibility as the foremost champion nationally. This isn't about me. It's about something that I think is right, and so I've just made a decision that. Although I will say that if I or a member of my family had a condition that could benefit from medical cannabis, I wouldn't hesitate for a heartbeat.
Now you have been in for some time. You've been a very vocal supporter of same-sex marriage. So, and for pretty much my whole life, every time that I've been following Oregon politics. So I do want to ask you, when I was, coming up with questions, why did you vote for the Defense of Marriage Act in 96?
It was, in retrospect, it is not something I would have done. I've written about that. What we were seeing at that point was an attempt by the Republicans to weaponize same-sex marriage and put people at political risk. And I viewed there may have been an opportunity to tone down a little bit their assault rather than weaponizing the same-sex marriage. It was wrong. There was no way that they were going to temporize. They were still going to try and divide people, and they were moving it forward. I concluded that that was a mistake. I was clear about that. I've always supported the wide range of protections, regardless of sexual orientation. I've been in the forefront of that at the state and local level and here in Congress. That was one time where I offered a political calculation, and it was a mistake, although there were people who frankly agreed with me about the problems who'd been leading this effort. It was a miscalculation, and I'm excited that we watched it catch fire and advance full marriage equality much faster than I thought possible.
And the reasoning behind the bow ties is just character. Is it that simple, or is there some sentimental value or some childhood story?
Well, actually, there was a famous U.S. Senator, Paul Simon, who had Oregon roots and who always wore a bow tie. When I came back here, Senator Mark Hatfield was celebrating Paul Simon's retirement. Every senator wore a bow tie, and Senator Hatfield said, "Well, you often wear a bow tie, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I wear them occasionally." He looked me in the eye and he said, "Always wear a bow tie."
That's a great story.
And I thought about it, and he was right. So as long as I've got a bow tie and a bike pin, I don't have to fumble for my identification getting into the Capitol.
Yeah, fair enough. Is that actually true? People don't question you? You just with the bow tie and the bike?
Nope. Bike and a bow tie.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for the time, Danielle. Obviously, thank you. Folks, before we go, I just want to remind you that we have a new tip line set up. So if you have any questions, any concerns, any tips to give us, email us at dive@wweek.com. We really want to hear from you guys. So shoot us an email, whatever it is, and we'll get back to you. Folks, that's our show. Thank you so much for listening. Tune in next week for another fun show. Thank you for listening again. Thank you for making us a part of your day. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. This has been the Dive Podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. For more information on this podcast or the biggest stories in Portland, go to wweek.com and follow Willamette Week on all socials. We're doing some really cool things related to the podcast on our Instagram and Twitter. It includes giveaways, behind the scenes, etc. A lot of cool things coming your way, so give those a follow. Special thanks to our guests for joining us, and thank you to Aaron Mesh, Mark Zussman, and Brian Panganibon, as well as the entire Willamette Week family. Last but not least, thank you so much to Heather Witte and AmpMusic.co for the music that you hear on this podcast. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. This has been the Dive Podcast.